From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Journey to Planet Serpo. Here's what's happening. You know, the relief effort in Louisiana is ramping up after 10 days of monumental flooding. President Barack Obama will visit Baton Rouge to survey the damage and find out how the federal government can help. The Red Cross has repeatedly described the flooding as the worst natural disaster to strike the United States since Hurricane Sandy hit the East Coast in 2012. 13 people have died, about 60,000 homes damaged in the flooding that began in Louisiana on August 12th. In San Bernardino, California, 5 days after an explosive wildfire in Southern California drove thousands from their homes, authorities lifted all evacuation orders on to allow them to return. About 82,000 people were ordered to leave their properties at one point when the fire broke out 60 miles east of Los Angeles. North Korea has threatened to launch a nuke first strike and turn South Korea and Washington, D.C. into a heap of ash. A threat that comes on the heels of China now using its military signal to that too, that it would go to war to enforce its territorial claims. They're even pushing Japan. Charles R. Smith is an expert on all things in the Asian area, and we wanted to bring him in to talk with him about these latest threats. I know this seems to be commonplace, Charles, but I mean, isn't enough enough?
Oh, no. You see, that plays well for the internal crowd. So, you know, all politics is internal, as they say. So, you know, if you're going to play well for the home crowd, you got to make the same noises all the time. And every time that we do an exercise, they threaten to vaporize us.
At what point will we say to Kim Jong-un, enough is enough, and do something about it?
Probably never. One of the big problems with Korea is that it is in such a bad shape, so very impoverished, that if we were able to overthrow Kim, we would also end up with about $1 trillion debt in order to bring them into the 21st century. So if you feel like spending $1 trillion to help North Korea, well, you know, that's the way to go. But even the South Koreans don't want to overthrow Kim because they know it's way too expensive just to bring them into the 20th century or even the 18th century.
And what about the rhetoric, Charles?
From map of North Korea at night, you'll see literally darkness.
Yes, you don't see anything really lit up.
The difference between North and South, so just by the electric lights alone.
What about the rhetoric now from China, though? You have to take them seriously.
The Chinese are a little bit different. In this case, they're flexing their muscle with their home-built islands, and they have definite intentions of protecting those not-so-mobile aircraft carriers that they have built in the region. They want to turn the Sea of Japan and the China Sea into literally their own territorial waters. And they've made that very clear for the past 10 years. We've ignored it. Well, now it's getting really difficult to ignore.
All right, Charles, thanks. And let's just hope it is indeed just rhetoric. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump called for an expedited investigation by a special prosecutor into the pay-to-play accusations involving the Clinton Foundation. Now, on Wednesday, Jerome Corsi, author of Partners in Crime, will join us to talk about the foundation. It is Mr. Corsi's first national interview on his latest work. Although, next time you go to the bank, you'll probably look around and make sure that it's still there, right? Or it's even open. Despite banks nudging towards online tools, many customers are not ready to give up regular visits to their nearest branch, complicating the industry's efforts to slim down. U.S. banks have trimmed the number of branches by 6% since it's peaked in 2009, according to the FDIC. The 93,283 branches opened at the end of last year, the lowest level in a decade. Catherine Austin Fitz, managing director and member of the Solari Report, Catherine, are these banks going to go away? What's going to happen to them?
I don't think so. Clearly, for reasons of transaction costs and productivities, there are a whole lot of people at the top of the financial system who would love to see things, go all digital and go online. But the reality is, if you look at the banking needs of many people, they need human contact and they need a way to get together and work on the various problems. So I think the community bank is going to be around for a long, long while.
Well, I think so, too. But these big branches, they're starting to close down. I mean, I've seen branches, even in a building out there in the studios in Los Angeles, there was a major bank that was in that building,
right. Gone.
They're remodeling. They're turning it into a yoga place. This is happening all around the country.
You have some big banks that are not high touch. And if you look at the interest rates that they're getting, they're not earning anything on their deposits. So, so the fundamental economics, as long as interest rates are low, are really changing for them. You have other banks who are very high touch, and they're the ones, if anything, where I see them or experience them, they're growing.
All right, Catherine, thanks so much. So the next time you go to your local bank, you might want to call ahead. A story that we've got in our highlights reel at coasttocoastam.com, absolutely unbelievable. A man in India spent 2 months swallowing knives, and he has now had 40 of them surgically removed from his stomach. Doctors are in shock. They said some of the knives were folded, some were unfolded, little ones, big ones. How could he swallow 40 knives, and he had them in his stomach? Well, they had to open him up, and they took them out. Truly unbelievable. Up next, we're going to look for Project Serpo. That's right, the secret journey to planet Serpo. Len Kasten joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. So last night I was just taking it easy, and up popped the Close Encounters of the Third Kind, just an incredible movie with Richard Dreyfuss and produced, directed by Steven Spielberg. And there was a scene in there when the craft came down, and it led everybody off that they had literally taken. And then the exchange program began, where we sent people into the craft who were going to go to their planet. It was an amazing story. Well, guess what we've got for you for a couple hours. Len Kasten, back with me, has been involved in UFO and ET-related research for more than 30 years. Former member of the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, NICAP, the Mutual UFO Network. He has lectured widely about the Serpo story in the Phoenix area, and he has been at major events and conferences all around the country. He's got a book coming out next March. Yeah, it's hard to believe. Next March, Alien World Order. And welcome back to Coast. Len, good to have you back.
Hey, George. Very nice to be back with you again.
I was looking at Close Encounters, and I was saying, I wonder if Spielberg knew something about Planet Serpo and that project, because it looked so close to what's been going on with this Serpo project. And here enough, you're here to talk about some of that, too. What do you think? Did he know something?
I think he did. He wrote the screenplay in one weekend in New York City. He couldn't do that if he didn't have the information at his fingertips. He couldn't have just done that that quickly if he was making it up.
So this book that you've got coming out in March, tell me a little bit about that. Just give me a highlight.
Well, I decided that we had to get more information about the reptilians. It became clear to me that we were involved in some sort of a confrontation with the reptilians on a very deep level. And then I came across a book by Robert Morning Sky that really validated that whole story, more so than anything David Icke wrote, and got into the history of the reptilians, where they come from, how they got here, etc. And I just put it all together, finally got it done.
Well, good for you. It's an exciting story. Let's go back a little bit, Len. And can you tell us, those people who are brand new to the program, what is the Planet Serpo situation? What is that?
Well, they've been back here 9 times already, and we've developed a diplomatic relationship with them, and they are our friends. So they've never abducted anybody. They are truly friends, and they've helped us with a lot of technological problems over the years.
How did this all occur? How did it start?
It all started with Roswell. The Roswell crash, which was actually a collision of the two alien craft. I think everybody knows that by now. And one alien survived, and that alien became information, gave us information about his home planet. And when the communications device that was found on the craft was rescued and fixed, he was able to communicate directly to his home planet. And one of the messages he sent was suggesting an exchange program. And evidently they agreed to it, but they said 10 years in the future. So that's exactly when it happened. It happened in 1962. He made the suggestion in 1952, and it actually came to reality in 1962 when President Kennedy was president. Kennedy said, go ahead with it. That's how it started. That's how it became, how it came to life.
And Len, they call these ETs Ebbins, of course, and they were obviously the gray-looking aliens, as people have described, I guess, right?
No, they weren't. They
really?
Weren't really looked, they didn't really look. They're about the same height, about four foot three. But these were sort of brownish-skinned. Cynthia Crawford really captured them in her sculpture. Many people know that Cynthia does sculptures of aliens, and she got them perfectly. They did not have wraparound eyes. They have large eyes, but not wraparound eyes. But they are from Zeta Reticuli, which supposedly is also where the grays are from. But the grays are not from Zeta Reticuli. That's another story. But these, the Ebens, and by the way, they got that name simply because it was a shortcut to saying extraterrestrial biological entity. That's how it came to that.
All right. So we named them that. Huh?
They do not abduct. They've never abducted anybody.
We are getting visited, though, by a number of different races, aren't we?
Absolutely, yeah. According to the Serpo story, Anonymous, who gave us the story, says that we're being visited by 9 different civilizations. And that's in my book, too. I've talked about that.
You know, when we were last on, almost 2 years ago, we just had an incredible journey with you about some of the things that you had worked on, Secret Journey to Planet Serpo and the Secret History of Extraterrestrials. Tell us what has changed or anything new might have occurred, Len, since we last talked.
A very interesting phenomenon has just occurred recently. Anonymous just updated the story in 2015 after a four-year period of time to which he didn't respond to anything, and gave some very, very interesting additional information. And one of the things he talked about was the fact that one of the Serpo astronauts survived until 2014. Up until that point, they kept that secret. He didn't want it known that one of the astronauts, we call them astronauts, they really weren't astronauts, was still alive. And actually, that survivor, who became known as Mr. Hero, actually met with the Pope in 2014 in New York City, and spent 2 hours with the Pope. Pope apparently knew a lot about the story, and he was supposed to only talk to him for 30 minutes. It turned into a 2.5-hour interview. So Cardinal Ratzinger, which was Pope Benedict XVI, actually met with one of the survivors or one of the veterans of the Serpo story.
Wow. The things they must have talked about, Len.
I know. I actually like to have been a fly in the wall.
Oh, my gosh. Truly. This is an incredible story. And when people hear it, generally, what's their reaction?
Most people think it's fantasy. They don't believe it. So I'm talking about people who are veteran UFO investigators. Just can't believe that it happened. And yet, to me, it's the most logical thing in the world that it would have happened. We would have had that ability to interact with another species at that point in time, 1960s, the mid-60s. I don't see why they're so skeptical. I really don't.
And you know, back to Spielberg for a moment. When Close Encounters came out, which I believe was in 77, wasn't it? 1977?
Yes, it was.
That was a year before the Serpo astronauts apparently came back.
That's correct.
So he
was still on Serpo at that point.
He was either psychically inclined or somebody was feeding him some great information.
I think it was the same DIA executive or official that ultimately revealed the story. It had to be, because he just knew too much. At that point, Mr. Anonymous was probably in his 30s, in the 70s. Now, of course, when he released the information in 2005, he was retired. We know that. And probably in his 60s or 70s. But when Spielberg made the movie, he was probably about 35 and very, very anxious to reveal the story, even then.
In the best way he could, I guess.
In the best way he could. And he knew that Spielberg had made a successful movie with Jaws and was the right person to do it. That's my theory. It's just a theory.
Well, you know what? It may have a lot of weight to it. With the meeting at the Vatican, was that endorsed by government?
The meeting at the Vatican?
With the Pope?
Yes. Absolutely, it was. In fact, we've kept the Vatican informed all along. The Evens have come back 9 times. We've met with them 9 times here, and at every juncture, we have informed the Vatican. Now, I'm not really sure why that is the case, but it does turn out that the Eben religious beliefs are somewhat similar to the Catholic religion.
Well, it could be, too, why the Catholic religion has basically changed its position on extraterrestrial life. You know, when they came out years ago with their statements that, you know, extraterrestrials and their belief of extraterrestrials doesn't mean that you have to not believe in God. And they really kind of tempered that. And I thought, well, this is interesting. Finally, they're coming out talking about extraterrestrial life.
It makes sense, really, because they now have to face the fact that if there are extraterrestrials, which clearly there are now, they must also be relevant or must be concerned with God, the God of the galaxy, the God who transcends the galaxy. Certainly, the entity we call God could not be limited to this one little blue marble here at the fringe of the galaxy. So if they can make the case that God also exists throughout the galaxy, then it becomes a whole different perspective.
Len Kasten's our special guest. We're talking about his work and his research. Of course, he's the author of Secret Journey to Planet Serpo, but he's also got an incredible book coming out in March of next year, Alien World Order, that you're definitely going to get you back here for, Len, when that comes out. Now, since this relationship with the Evans, what kind of technology have we developed here?
Well, one of the things, there have been many breakthroughs. You know, this all started with the Roswell crash. And I think those of you who have read Colonel Corso's book know how much technology we obtained from just that one crash, right? You've had interviews on, there was talked about that.
Yeah.
So the entities that crashed at Roswell were the Ebens. That's where it all started. And then when they took us to their planet, we were able to observe their tremendous biotechnology and their ability to go through wormholes and travel through wormholes. So just imagine, we have all that information. We have all that information. We've had it for 35 years. And it's probably advanced way, way beyond what it was then. So, for instance, the particle beam weapons. I think most of your listeners now know what a particle beam weapon is. It fires a beam of particles at incredibly, a very, very, very fast speed to the point where it vaporizes anything it touches. We basically got that technology from the Evens.
Why do we suppress it, Len? Why do we keep it a secret?
Well, that gets into my new book, George, because we're really being managed. the entire human race is being managed.
All right, hold that thought, Len. We're going to come back and talk about that. Len Kasten, our special guest. We'll take phone calls with Len next hour as we talk about this incredible story of Planet Serpo. It's truly remarkable. And again, we can't get into everything he has written about for his March 2017 book, Alien World Order, but we'll grab a little information out of him on that, too. Really looking forward to this Saturday in Asheville, North Carolina, with our live stage show event with three incredible guests, Joshua P. Warren on the paranormal, Micah Hanks on UFOs, and William Forstchen on EMPs and solar X-flares and live music, and just some great times at a meet and greet as well. Tickets still available, and they will take walk-ins. If you can't get rolling on your computer to order your tickets, they will take walk-ins. I'm going to also give you a phone number where you can call the theater during business hours only. But all the seats are sold now on the bottom level. The balcony is now open, and they're good seats because it's a quaint theater. So if you want to call them, it's 828-257-4530, 828-257-4530 during business hours. The website's always open right there at coasttocoastam.com. Click the Asheville event, and it'll take you into the theater's website. Click tickets, look for the date, August 27th, and then do what you want. And then there's a section there. Click the picture of the balcony, and you'll see the seats there, and you just select your own. August 27th is coming up this Saturday. See you in Asheville, North Carolina. And welcome back to Coast, Len Kasten with us. We're talking about his work on Project Serpo. Incredible story, Len. When you first heard it, when you're first looking into it, did you believe it?
You know, I did. It struck me as true based on a lot of the things I had already investigated. It made a lot of sense that we had been keeping this information under wraps for such a long time. So that's the reason I got into it, really. When Bill Ryan first started telling me about it, I just realized intuitively that it was a true story. And as I delved into it, it became more and more logical. And then, of course, putting it together with the Spielberg movie, it all clicked.
Indeed. So we're talking a little bit before the break, and I know this is going to be a lot of your book in March of 2017, Alien World Order. But why do you think they're suppressing this information from us? What are they afraid of?
Well, it's all about technology. Tremendous technology resulted. We learned a lot about how to go through wormholes by our trip to Serpo, and also about free energy. You know, we found out that the Ebens on Serpo do not have to worry about such things as money, and we learned about their biotechnology. That the Illuminati, the clique that runs this planet, does not want that information known. It's very clear. There's too much money involved. The entire oil industry depends on not having free energy.
That's right.
So to learn about a planet that where there is no worry about energy and nobody pays for any energy, I think would discombobulate their whole system here.
Do you think the Ebens are looking for God as well as we are?
Looking for God? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
They apparently have a very firm religious belief system in God, but they don't call him God really. They don't really make him into an entity. It's a force really to them. They call him Creator really, much like on Star Trek. And it's, you know, to create a galaxy requires something more than a superhuman, and they apparently are cognizant of that. But their belief, nevertheless, is very similar to the Catholic belief in many other ways. And they do believe in reincarnation, in the form of reincarnation.
Do they? Okay, I'm going to be talking about that later on tonight with Dr. Bruce Goldberg, reincarnation. So
oh, yeah,
interesting.
That should be good.
Super. Now, you have talked about a confrontation between a team commander and the Ebon scientists over what you call Body 308. Tell me about that story. What happened?
Well, one of the 12 men died on the way to Serpo. He had a pulmonary embolism. And the team commander, who was really a kind of Captain Kirk kind of guy, was very aggressive about making sure he kept control of the scientific aspects
mm-hmm.
of the journey.
And the team commander being a human being, right?
Yes, he was one of the 12, right.
Okay.
It was actually, we found out later, that's one of the things we just learned, was that he was really an Air Force colonel. Anyway, he when they got to Serpo, and he asked for the body, it was number 308. They all went by three-digit numbers. They gave up their real names, and they referred to each other as three-digit numbers. 308 was one of the pilots. Yes, he's one of the pilots. And the Ebens told him that that body no longer existed, that they had used it in their experiments, and that they had created a clone entity that was part Eben, part human, and they just didn't have a body to return over to him anymore. And he was furious. He said, that body belongs to planet Earth, United States government.
Sure.
And he actually got to the point where he wanted to actually blow open the coffin that they had supposedly had. And he told his security man to go get the guns. And the even female that was his liaison said, please, no guns. She put her hand on his chest, said, no guns. She said, I'll get the scientist to talk to you about it. And she did, and this particular scientist actually spoke English, which really, really rocked the captain. He couldn't believe it. The team commander demanded to see what was left of the body. And so they took them into this laboratory and showed them this strange creature that was about as tall as a human, had large hands and feet, and other than that, was sort of looked like an Eben, large eyes. And the captain, the team commander, was disgusted by this. He was revolted by this, that they would do this. And he said in his diary, I have seen the dark side of this civilization. To him, it was evil. Actually, to them, it was just science. That's all. They had been roaming the galaxy, picking up arms and legs and body parts from all over, and factoring it into their biological sciences. So for them, it was strictly scientific inquiry. And in any case, it led to that confrontation. The team commander realized there was nothing he could do about it, and ultimately, they just forgot about it.
When the Serpo astronauts came back in 78, had they aged much?
Well, they had aged. They'd aged pretty much the way they would have aged here, actually.
Okay, so
yes, they had aged, but they had absorbed a lot of radiation, and that ultimately shortened their lives somewhat. Although, as I said, this one survivor did stay alive here until 2014.
What a story that might have been, huh?
Yes, and met the Pope in New York. It's really an amazing story.
It really is. What kind of propulsion system, Len, was being used?
They had two forms of advanced propulsion that we don't have. They had antimatter, which they used, but what they used for interstellar navigation was they traveled through wormholes. And traveling through a wormhole is really not so much travel, it's really folding space to the point where you can jump from one part of space to another. And they were able to cover trillions of miles instantaneously. When you consider that the Zeta Reticuli star system is 40 light years from our solar system, that means they covered 240 trillion miles in 9 months. That factors down to traveling at 40 times the speed of light.
Oh my gosh. And probably through wormholes and everything else.
Through wormholes, yes. And of course, the 9 months was taken up in stellar navigation, getting to and from the wormhole and acceleration, deceleration. But basically, when traveling through the wormhole was instantaneous. It was basically traveling through time, space itself.
Where exactly is the planet Serpo?
Well, you know, it's pretty much it's in the Zeta Reticuli star system, which is a dual star system, and it revolves around Zeta Reticuli 1. It's the fourth planet in that solar system.
Stanton Friedman talks of that system quite often.
Who does?
Stanton Friedman.
Yes. Yes.
Quite often. And the craft itself that was used to take the astronauts back and forth, do we know what it looked like?
Well, at one point, the team commander was standing in a room that he said had a 100-foot ceiling. So it must have been massive. And we get some idea of what it looked like from one incident that occurred on April 24th, 1964. It's the famous incident that occurred in New Mexico where...
With a police officer?
I'm sorry?
With the police, Lonnie Zamora?
Lonnie Zamora incident.
Yeah.
He saw this huge craft sitting on the ground and two entities or two beings in white overalls, it looked like, standing in front of it. And when they saw it, they realized they were being observed. They jumped on it and took off. That particular craft was one of the two that they had sent on that date. That was the agreed-upon date, April 12th, 1964. And they eventually found the right location in Holloman Air Force Base. So we know a little bit more about what it looked like from his description of it. And that's our only clue, really.
Were the presidents at the time in on this?
Now, were you talking about 1964?
64, 65. They came back in 78. So were these presidents that we had during this era, did they know about this?
Well, Kennedy had to give the go-ahead.
Okay.
Because in 1962, which was when they were ready for the exchange program, he was a president. And he said, go ahead, but by the time it came about, he had been assassinated. So the people from the DIA had to go to Johnson and get his approval. And he said, okay, go ahead with it. It's not going to happen anyway. He didn't believe it was going to happen. He was very skeptical. So he said, yeah, go ahead. And, of course, by the time they came back in 1978, at that point, Carter was the president. But I don't think he was read in on the Serpil story.
I am going to guess, Len, that the astronauts that went, the 12 of them, probably didn't have family here. Is that a pretty good guess?
It is a very good guess, because that was one of the selective collection site criteria. They wanted men who preferably had been in the military, and it didn't matter which branch, just as long as they had military discipline, because they knew they would need it on a trip like this. And the other criterion was they would have to be either orphans themselves, and they'd have to be preferably orphans if possible, and not married and have no family. That was one of the requirements of the selection process. So the reason for that had to do with possibly a family member revealing some of the information. It was highly compartmentalized, and they didn't want to have any possibility of it being revealed.
Of the 12 that went, how many came back? 11?
According to my calculations, it was 7.
7.
Anonymous says 8, but 8 could not be correct. It had to be 7 for the following reason. We do know that one died on the way, number 308, of a pulmonary embolism. We also know that two died on Serpo, and one of them was the doctor, by the way. And then two of them decided to stay there. We know that. So that's 5. That means that 7 came back.
The next time I look at Close Encounters of the Third Kind, I'm going to count the astronauts that
right.
were wearing the sunglasses. And if he's got 12, then something's really going on.
Well, there were 12 in the movie. That's right, but two of them were women. And the reason that there were two women in the Spielberg movie is because that was the original intent. But they actually selected 16. They didn't select 12. They selected 12 plus 4 alternates. And in those 4 alternates, there were two women. I think they were, one of them was a linguist. But when the final cut was made, they decided to make it an all-man team, and that's what it was.
Is it happening now, or is it over? Project is over.
What, Serpo?
Serpo.
Well, we've established a relationship with that civilization, a diplomatic relationship. They now are our friends in the galaxy, and they've been back 9 times since then.
Have we sent astronauts back there?
Well, that's the question. Wouldn't you think that we probably did at this
time? You would think so.
I would think we probably have a colony there by now, because we found out that the climate was very temperate in the northern hemisphere. It was actually like, they named it Little Montana. It was so perfect. So since we ourselves now have spacecraft that can take the trip, which we do, and about the same size, we most likely have created a small colony there. That would be my guess.
Len, how did we get the information that Project Serpo did occur?
It was revealed by somebody who called himself Anonymous.
Okay.
In November of 2005, and we know now that he was one of the members of the DIA. He was a DIA official.
And not to be confused with Anonymous, that is releasing information through the internet. Totally different person, right?
Totally different, yeah.
Okay.
He called himself Anonymous. He just didn't want his name known. Some people who were involved with the program knew who he was. He was very high up in the intelligence apparatus, because he was somebody who... Are you familiar with the Red Book? Do you know what the Red Book
is? Yes, yes.
Well, he was the editor of the Red Book, and in order to be the editor of the Red Book, he had to be near the top of the intelligence hierarchy, because his job was to brief sitting presidents every 4 years.
Right.
So he had to be somebody of importance, and my guess is that he was on MJ-12. He had to be on MJ-12.
Did anybody describe what the planet Serpo looks like? Is it Earth-like, or what's it like?
Very much around the same size as Earth. And when they landed on the equatorial region, which was extremely hot. And the team commander said in his diary that it looked like Arizona or New Mexico. It was just like sandy desert and extremely hot. It was so hot they had to live underground for a long time because they just couldn't take the heat. It was unbearable. But then the northern quadrant was very, very temperate and had the kind of foliage that we know about here. Beautiful trees, mountains, water. And the 12 decided that they would like to live there for the last portion of their journey there. And the Evens were very accommodating. They built them a little village in that quadrant. And they finished out their last 7 years in that quadrant, and it was very comfortable for them.
We are 4.5 billion years old. Any idea how old planet Serpo is?
Serpo was not their home planet. It was their adopted planet. Their original planet had been destroyed by volcanic activity.
All right.
And they had navigated all over the galaxy looking for another home, and that's where they settled, in Zeta Reticuli.
But do we know how old that planet was? That system?
I don't really know that. That information is buried somewhere in the literature, but I can't recall exactly how old it was.
Truly a remarkable story, Len.
It is a remarkable story, and it's one that we should get familiar with, because it opens up so many doors. It makes us understand what kind of technology we must have by now. I mean, we must have some tremendous technology derived from that visit. Had to.
Do we know if the Russians ever got involved in some kind of trading program with them, or was it just us?
The last time that they returned that we know about was in November of 2009. And in that visit, we did invite the Russian Federation, the Russian government, to that meeting, and also the People's Republic of China. We also invited representatives of the Vatican. We did open it up in 2009 when they came back in November of that year and landed on Johnston Island, which is right in the mid-Pacific. And it's really, the whole island is an American military establishment. It looks like an aircraft carrier.
Jeez, what a story. Len, stay with us. We're going to take a break. Let's come back and talk a little bit about your new work that's coming out in March of next year, Alien World Order. And we'll take phone calls for the next hour on Coast to Coast AM.